Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden, and joining me in the studio today as co-host is activist Brent Turner. Donald Trump said that he would be a dictator from day one. We're now at day 16. And President Trump has signed 45 executive orders, actually 46 as of today, many of which serve to upend protections on which various people, most notably folks in the LGBTQI plus community, have justifiably relied upon. To name but a few, a huge omnibus order sweeping aside 78 of President Biden's executive orders, including Executive Order 13895, advancing racial equity and support for underserved communities through the federal government. Executive Order 13988, preventing and combating discrimination on the basis of gender identity or sexual orientation. Executive Order 14004, enabling qualified Americans to serve their country in uniform. Executive Order 14021, guaranteeing an educational environment free from discrimination on the basis of sex, including sexual orientation or gender identity. Executive Order 14035, diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility in the federal workforce. Executive Order 14075, advancing equality for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and intersex individuals. The list of affected policies goes on and on, but many of the provisions of this order alone are aimed at what the president and his administration have coined immediate steps to end federal implementation of unlawful and radical ideology. Brent?
Good evening, everyone. Jeff, what you just said was entirely correct, and a large percentage of Trump's orders were aimed at the trans community. But this is but one of the communities targeted as the administration seeks to erase DEI policies everywhere they appear. Jeff, you pointed out that they're the huge omnibus order, but that's just the beginning. Other orders are far more targeted. Specifically, I've got a list here of top of the list. Executive Order 14151, signed on day one, aimed at ending government DEI programs and preferencing. Executive Order 14168, signed the same day, purportedly to defend women from gender ideology extremism and restoring biological truth to the federal government. It ends any ability for folks to identify as anything but the gender he or she had at birth. And finally, there's Executive Order 14183. That's under the guise of prioritizing military excellence and readiness, states that expressing a false gender identity divergent from an individual's sex cannot satisfy the rigorous standards necessary for military service. So this is specifically aimed at expelling anyone deemed as transgender from serving in the United States military. Jeff?
You know, I could tell you about 9 of the executive orders signed to date, or 10 as of today. And remember, we're just over 2 weeks into the administration. But one thing that doesn't come out, I could talk about executive order numbers, but that doesn't begin to tell the story. When you look at the language in these orders and how they're titled, they don't talk about disenfranchising people that are from different communities. Instead, it talks about expanding educational freedom and opportunity for families, which they do by excluding others, or ending racial indoctrination, radical indoctrination in K-12 schools. These are the way these orders are captioned, and it lets you know how they think of other communities. And it's not just that one community. It's all sorts of communities, communities of color, communities where they're trying to level the playing field. It's, as was pointed to me just moments ago, shock and awe. That was the strategy. And as we pointed out in our show last week, the political impact of America's shift to the right is historical. But perhaps even more significant is its personal impact on each and every one of us as individuals, that price that we pay in anxiety or uncertainty or even depression. Over the coming weeks and months, we plan to host conversations with some of America's top political scientists, economists, legal scholars, elected officials, and community activists about life in a world dominated by a Trump administration. Tonight, we want to look at the various communities that are being disenfranchised. What's being aimed at supporting at the community level? What can be done to resist? And what support might be available? Brent?
Well, I think disenfranchised is a pretty light word. I think they're under siege at this point. And I had a conversation today with some folks from Alas on the coast side in Half Moon Bay. And my understanding is the sheriff conducted an investigation of some sort this morning. And the fact that it looked like ICE sent out a fear campaign into the community and people went running for cover. It's just another reverberation, another rippling effect of this kind of doctrine. And
of course, you're not saying ICE was there. You're just saying that the fear of ICE, because it's been so played up.
That's right.
That's
right. So that happened this morning. I do want to just take a moment on that note in case we don't get back to it and say for the migrant community, the farm workers and such, there is what's called the San Mateo County Rapid Response Hotline, and that number is 203-666-4472. Again, 203-666-4472. And I tested the line, and someone will answer. So if you do happen to run in and you see ICE prowling about, that's a good number.
And no matter where you live in the Bay Area, there should be a hotline available to you. And there are for various communities, because candidly, the anxiety that people are feeling over America today is palpable.
Well, I've mentioned to you that, you know, we may have someone joining us on the line who ran for Congress, a transgender person that I'm hoping can show up and give some perspective. But we've seen, you know, this assault on the LGBT and the transgender community coming from Trump. He promised to focus on them, and apparently they're the first community he's going after.
And undoubtedly there will be others.
So last week we talked about navigating Trump world, and you just mentioned that, you know, people are obviously suffering depression and other rippling effects of the new Trump regime. And, of course, my opinion is if you're not affected by this, you're not paying attention. And I guess it's good to seclude oneself from the daily information, but anyone checking in on the dailies is seeing that this maniac is hell-bent on disassembling the democracy, and he must be stopped at all costs.
So we want to give you a chance to join us in our conversation. This is really your opportunity to vent. We want to hear what's on your mind and answer your questions. And after all, if we do this well, you're not going to hear as much from Brent and I. We'll be hearing a lot more from you. But as always, we want to hear what's on your mind and answer your questions. You can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation. But please remember that the opinions expressed on this show are the opinions of the hosts and the guests alone, do not necessarily reflect those of NPR, KALW, or any of their employees or sponsors or underwriters. And while we can discuss general principle of law or politics, we can't, neither a host nor guest can give you independent legal advice. But we want to help. We want to give you tools. So give us a call at 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Brent?
Yeah, our guests tonight are uniquely qualified to help us understand the dynamics of our collective relationship with Donald J. Trump. And I'm hoping on the line coming up will appear Rockathena Brittain, who ran for Congress in 2024 and made history as the first transgender woman to run for Congress in Nevada's 3rd Congressional District. I'm proud to call her a friend of mine. And, Jeff, do we have her on the phone?
That we do.
Very good.
Also joining us tonight, an adjunct professor at the University of San Francisco School of Law, where he teaches a course on race and the law. Jamal Anderson is an assistant district attorney in the San Francisco District Attorney's Office, where he was previously designated as the office's lead hate crimes prosecutor. Prior to joining the San Francisco District Attorney's Office, Jamal worked as a senior associate at the Rennie Public Law Group in San Francisco and served as a deputy district attorney in the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office. Before becoming an attorney, Jamal worked for several members of Congress in Washington, D.C., and served as federal affairs advisor to the mayor of Washington, D.C. Mr. Anderson serves on the board of Bay Area Lawyers for Individual Freedom, the nation's oldest and largest LGBTQI+ bar association. And with that, Rockathena, Jamal, to both of you, welcome to your legal rights.
Hi there.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, as our listeners know, let's start the conversation with a big question, and we'll point this toward Rockathena. And hello, Rockathena. Do you think we're overstating it, or is this the panic situation that we're portraying it as?
No. I think it's entirely accurate. In fact, it's just shocking that it's taken this long for people to finally begin to take it seriously, honestly. But the consequences are happening in real time. And so, you know, whether it be human nature or just human behavior, people don't tend to pay attention until it's happening to them. And that's what's beginning to happen now to so many people.
Unfortunately, that's been history, too. People don't learn from history. And when other leaders have done such, this is what happens. They target a first community and start to roll onto another, and people don't pay attention unless it's them.
Rockathena, what was your experience running as you did? You ran for Congress. What was your experience there? Did you suffer what you felt was discrimination? Tell us your story.
Let me put it this way. Running as a Democrat, as a challenger to an establishment corporate Democratic incumbent, it was pretty apparent to me, even before anybody said anything to me, and of course they did confirm it on their own, and the time went on to prove it, was that, the Democratic Party for me, just completely shunned me. And of course, because I'm challenging one of their own. But it was just being roundly ignored, by literally every media outlet that I contacted, both locally, statewide and nationwide after my initial press run came out. It was a real shutout, in terms of getting any coverage at all. And, it was newsworthy. In fact, by comparison, there were some other transgender congressional candidates across the country who received, national press and whatnot. Of course, Sarah McBride that eventually was elected, and another couple in Ohio, and I forget the other one, but when you send out press releases and you contact people and you do everything you can do, and you get, you know, you get nothing in return. And, you know, that's one aspect of, you know, of the shutout and, you know, some form of discrimination from really your own party that I experienced.
I see.
Let me jump in for a moment. I'd like to turn it over to Lisa from San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi there. I'm calling. I tuned in to hear the part of the beginning of the subject of this program, and I believe it's to do with the horrific nightmare that is unfolding for transgender people, and but also for immigrants as well. Is that correct?
Correct.
And so what I would like to know is for people like me, who I'm very sympathetic, or sympathetic is too weak a word. I'm in a good position to be an ally, but I'm wondering if I'm walking on the street or riding on a bus and a police officer or ICE or someone threatens a trans person or an immigrant, what can I do? Can I start filming? What can I do to oppose and to align and shield legally? What can I do?
I think I'm going to turn this one over to my guest, Jamal Anderson, who's been a hate crimes prosecutor and knows this area better than most. But be careful about your own personal safety and never lose sight of that.
Yes.
You know, I think I'm going to take this one away from him. As I'm thinking about it, Mr. Anderson is also a prosecutor and has to be careful about what he is saying in this area. But I don't recommend that. I don't recommend getting right involved in the fray when it's something that's more on an even footing. Yes, you can involve yourself. You can certainly summon help. You can certainly get others to join you in the fray, but to go in one-on-one because somebody's you don't want to, and you certainly don't want to meet physical violence to meet something that's other than.
Definitely not, but what if I, you know, stated something, I'm still learning about this, I think we all are, but, you know, you have the right to remain silent. You have a right to an attorney. You don't need to say anything. And to film, I mean, these are things that are
It's legal. Very dangerous. Now, California law will protect you from filming police activity. That doesn't mean that federal law will protect you from filming ICE activity. And the two have a very different. You can't intervene. And you certainly don't want to put you in a spot where you could be accused of resisting, obstructing, delaying, that type of thing that we all refer to as resisting arrest commonly. And it's a dangerous place to be.
No, I don't want to put myself in danger. But I did read yesterday, I thought I read that unless I was on federal land, or it really depended where I was, if I were on a public bus or in a public place, that I could film, or I could, I'm not talking about throwing punches or, you know, really, I'm just, well, I think I need to research this more, actually.
You probably do. You have to be careful. California law protects you from filming, you know, for filming at a distance, and that cannot be considered resisting arrest. And that's actually a new law that was effective starting last year. But that doesn't mean you'll have the same protections under federal law.
Right. Okay.
And again, that hotline for the San Mateo County Rapid Response, which I think is good nationally, is 203-666-4472.
And you can contact somebody, whether it's that hotline or another, and get instructions and see if there are allies that can help. or if they can give you specific instructions on how you can let the person know that they have resources, but ultimately you can't get in the middle of it.
I gotcha. Okay. Thank you very much to the panel. Thank you all. Yes.
Thank you for joining us.
Jeff, I want to go back to your initial question, if I can.
By all means.
About whether or not you are overstating what we've seen this administration do so far. And I think the short answer to that question is no. First of all, taking a step back to ask a preliminary question, obviously, does the president have the authority to issue these executive orders? And certainly the answer to that question is yes. The Constitution of the United States vests in the president the executive power.
I don't want to jump in and correct you, but it's yes to some of them.
Well, I'm going to get there. Okay. Let me just finish. Let me finish my answer, and then we'll go back and forth. So the executive order is a written directive signed by the president that orders the government to take specific actions to ensure that the laws be faithfully executed. So it might, for example, mean telling the Department of Education to implement a certain rule or declaring a new policy priority. They cannot, however, override federal laws and statutes. What the executive orders can do is indicate how a federal agency is to implement a particular statute. So what we've seen thus far, and looking specifically at the initiatives or orders regarding diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, is the president directing federal agencies to take particular action in light of his interpretation of existing laws. And so, for example, you see as an outgrowth of that, West Point today, for example, issuing an order to their students, disbanding certain student organizations that mention race or ethnicity or other marginalized groups. You saw the president place on leave across the federal government DEI or diversity, equity, and inclusion officers, ultimately probably with the intent to lay those folks off. You've seen the president indicate that it is his intention to withhold federal funding from educational institutions of higher learning and others that are teaching or involved in diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. And so to the point that you were trying to make a moment ago, these executive orders can and will be and already are being challenged. The broader point, though, to your specific question about the seriousness of the conduct is the fact that, much like with the targeting of the trans community, we see the president of the United States and the administration using its weight to target a broad swath of the population, primarily people of color, primarily marginalized communities. And it is worth noting that, you know, recent surveys like the Pew Research Center study from 2023 looked at how Americans feel about these programs, these diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. And they found that a majority of the Americans, employed Americans, 56%, were fine with increased efforts focused on DEI, and found that to be a good thing. So it does beg the question why the president is doing this when it seems that the majority of the American people are not in favor of these efforts, and more specifically, why the president would target particular people in a manner that ultimately and unfortunately may result in their harm.
One of the executive orders that caught my attention, there's actually two or three that combine to have this effect, but there are orders that basically say that if somebody is transgender, they're per se unfit to serve in the military. It seems to me that that per se is facially ripe to be challenged to the extent it's used not only to exclude but possibly remove people from the military.
Jeff, do we have Rakathina back online?
Yes. Rakathina, can you hear us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, great. I would love your take on that. Do you think that those orders will be challenged? They're all titled. All of his orders are titled with things that sound perfectly reasonable until you see the content. Prioritizing military excellence and readiness, restoring Americans' fighting force. But then they talk about using things that are incredibly discriminatory to say who's really fit to serve. Do you think that that's something that could be challenged?
Well, absolutely. I mean, and of course, they're doing the same thing they do with any bill they introduce that, you know, they hope to pass into law, is to, you know, call it something that sounds really good while the contents of it describe, you know, a very biased and bigoted opinion toward, you know, in this case, you know, transgender Americans. And so, you know, this is the frog in the slow boiling pot of water, to where what they're doing with people is they're training people in, you know, they're indoctrinating people into understanding how to dehumanize, you know, transgender people. That, you know, if you read that one, on the military ban, it, you know, goes on to describe why they say transgender people are unfit, and that it's, you know, that it's a dishonest way to live, that it's, you know, so on and so forth. And so it's describing, in their opinion, every transgender American, you know, service member or not. And again, they're training people to view transgender Americans as, you know, as subhuman, inferior, and in fact, you know, delinquent and criminal in nature, which, you know, the criminality aspect of it is really what's outlined in Project 2025, specifically about how they intend to classify transgender Americans in general. So I hope that makes sense.
And can I just add to those comments, which are absolutely correct? You know, first and foremost, this isn't a ban. It is a directive to the Defense Secretary to implement what arguably is discrimination in the military. Second, you know, there is no evidence that gender identity has a negative impact on an individual's capacity to serve. In fact, there's research that shows that the president's previous ban on trans service had a negative impact on military readiness, unit cohesion, and national security. It should also be said and noted that at least 30 countries around the world allow open service for transgender military personnel, including the United Kingdom and Israel, which is all to say that these orders, this effort, seems to be at odds with the desire to have and enable the most elite fighting force in the country, in the world, I should say.
It's almost as if outside country forces are controlling the brain of our president.
It seems to me that he sees himself first and foremost as a leader and secondarily as a coalition builder, and he has attracted some of the most hateful or negative thoughts, persons sharing those thoughts in the country, and has used that to forge a coalition. And his primary objective seems to be to stay in power. I can't climb in his head, but it seems to be that what is most interest in him is to be vindicated by getting back there, much more so than the content of what he's saying.
I think it's called the Barron Plan. Yeah, he's got some more in store for our country. I think I'm still hopeful someone that he'll be stopped in some way, but we can only hope.
When we return from the break, I want to shift gears a bit. We've heard from Governor Newsom and in recent weeks Attorney General Bonta, amongst others, and they've spent a lot of time and budgeted money from the state budget to resist the administration's efforts to ramp up immigration enforcement, just by way of example. And to the extent that anybody on the line knows, have there been similar efforts to protect other communities outside of immigration per se, whether it's based on race or gender or ethnicity or sexual orientation? Are there places that the state has established where people can go for support? But as I said, we do have to break for station break. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, we're discussing the Donald Trump regime and the attack on various communities, on the LGBTQI plus community, on diversity, equity, and inclusion policies, on immigrants, on various minorities, in what one might say is shock and awe, but another is divide and conquer. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. It's really a chance for you to vent, even if you don't come in at the exact point that we may be in our conversation.
And Jeff, before we move on to more callers, hopefully, and hopefully Rock Athena stays with us, I want to say a couple things. One, certainly, I don't mean to intimate anything other than legal means to stop this regime. And secondly, I want to express my gratitude for Rock Athena for hanging in on the show with us and being so brave, not only to run for Congress, but to continue to be outspoken on this issue.
And I do want to break for callers, but before I do, I want to join in those remarks. There is nothing that is close to helpful, as close as you are by running for office, sticking your head out there, proceeding by lawful means, and really being a part of opening people's minds, sharing dialogue, whatever it may be. Both of my guests tonight were here, were there to see me do so 10 years ago. It was an amazing experience to run for office, and you can help a lot, whether it's something local, whether it's something larger in scope, whether you're supporting somebody, whether you're doing it yourself, whether you're doing legal work, anything that gets words out there, that gets people to expand their minds to think in a broader terms than the very closed-minded. Really, there's the closed-minded dialogue that's been forced upon us. And let me turn it to Maria from Oakland. You're on Your Legal Rights.
Oh, my God. I am a 76-year-old, white, straight, conservatively raised New York woman who did nothing but lip service during the 60s and 70s. And although I've had gay and transgender friends all throughout the years, this is hitting really hard for me. My only grandchild is an 8-year-old born male who wants to be identified as a girl, has for years, and is the child of a wonderful Vietnamese immigrant who came here as one of both people. And I will march, and I will fight, and I will do anything to make sure that they are safe and they can live their lives in whatever way they want. And I'm just so upset by this whole thing because I knew the bastard in New York, and what a bastard he is. So just tell me how I can help, because I'm not rich. I don't have money. I need to know how I can help.
And as we were saying a few moments ago, get involved. Find somebody that you could help that's running for office. You may not have a lot of financial resources to share. Not all of us do.
I have been one of the writers for letters. In fact, my Vietnamese daughter-in-law, you know, led a whole campaign for, you know, and she's very active politically. But, you know, if we can get to Washington, I mean, I got something from Obama the other day. asking for money, but I don't have any to give. So I can do the writing again, which I've started. And so what other things can I do besides writing? I think we need to do something very forceful. I mean, we have to. We can't let this continue. He's bringing this country to the brink of 38. This is unreal.
Thank you for your beautiful sentiments here and your dedication to democracy. There's a multitude of things you can do to be further involved. Obviously, there's if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, the San Francisco Democratic Party is quite robust and building with youth, yes, and they need guidance and energy. If you call into the station, we can make sure that at least I can make sure that you have access, and they're easy to find. And there's numerous groups from Swing Left, and right now Indivisible is doing good work that I know about, reaching out to the congressional members. So there's a multitude of things for you to put your energy there and just keep the faith. And thank you for, again, just being a part of it.
I just want to say one more thing. I have been so upset that he won this election. And I know there are a lot more people like me out there who have turned off everything because we can't deal with what's been, you know, what we think is going to happen down the line. And I've ignored, and I haven't looked at the news, the radio, anything, newspapers, because it would be too much. And now I've listened to what's going on. I've heard it, and I won't stay silent anymore. And I will contact, you know, through my daughter-in-law, some of the Democratic things, and I will talk to you later about this. Hopefully.
You know, just finding people of like mind, so that you could combine resources, so that you have different people participating, sharing ideas, dividing up tasks, making it more efficient, whether it's sending out letters or letters to the newspaper or getting heard on the radio as you are right now. I think Jamal Anderson had some ideas also in this.
Maria, I was just going to add, first of all, thank you for your comments. You know, there are things that you can do that are both personal and political. You know, on the personal front, obviously, to really focus on and uplift your relative as best you can and other individuals that you know. You know, for many people, particularly members of the LGBTQ plus community, people of color and others who are bearing the brunt of this president's targeting, there really isn't an option to look away.
No, there isn't.
I would encourage you to be in touch with those people as best you can, to provide support to them in whatever way makes the most sense for you. And then on the political front, certainly being in touch with your members of Congress, your other elected officials, running for office yourself, supporting other people, like-minded people who are running for office as well, gearing up for the next election, which is just around the corner. It seems like a long time away, but really doing the best that you can in very trying times to keep the faith. And if you do that, perhaps that will give you some purpose and encouragement.
And also remember, Zach De La Rocha from Rage Against the Machine said, anger is a gift.
Remember one thing, and maybe our guest on the phone can talk about this as well, but we live in a bubble in California, but it's a somewhat diminishing bubble in the sense that California is losing population vis-a-vis some of the other states, as is New York, and New York has been for a long time, as is Illinois. And in the end, the blue states, led by the three states I just mentioned, are going to lose 12 more congressional seats by the next census unless things radically change. The one thing we haven't mentioned is making your voice heard outside of this area, letting people know that there are people getting hurt, letting people know the way you feel in places where not everybody feels the way you do, but people may listen to you. We have on the phone Rakathina from who ran recently for Congress in the 3rd District of Nevada. That's a way of getting heard somewhere where you don't have people predisposed to think the way that is so prevalent in San Francisco.
And also that brings up the work of Swing Left and the groups that focus on turning red to blue. And so there are groups out there specifically designed for that purpose that may be of interest if you can stomach those conversations.
Okay. Well, I'm going to stop being an ostrich with my head in the sand and get out and start doing some stuff. Like, first of all, being in touch with my daughter-in-law, because she is very active, as I said, and I've sort of been hiding away, not dealing with it, not owning up and accepting and dealing with things and working towards having some resolution here, or at least knowing that I went down fighting, you know.
Good work.
I will go to Washington or wherever we need to go. And if they think they had a big turnout to hit our Capitol building those 4 years ago, 5 years ago, wait, it's going to happen, and I will be right there in front. I was with the Bobby Kennedy Jr. in the mountains of West Virginia when they had that anniversary, and I was in a wheelchair at the time, but I will march again, this time on D.C. to get Trump out.
Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome. Let me turn to Anna Marie from San Francisco.
Great. Hi. I'd like to give the lady who just spoke a one-stop shopping place. Go to indivisible.org. Not only will you get specific information, but you can join the Thursday call, which is tomorrow around noon Pacific time. Sign up for that, and you'll get more information. So you don't have to shop all around, but if you're an advocate for protecting our democracy, check at indivisible.org. Do that right now. Sign up. Be online tomorrow at noon, or, you know, if you can. And you will learn quite a bit. You'll gain information, and you'll get ideas about specific things that you can do. And when you receive lots and lots of donation requests, just ignore those and do what you can do. Okay? I hope that helps.
That helps a lot. I do appreciate your volunteering that. And for somebody like Maria, do they have instructions or something that when she goes to that site will lift somebody who just wants to get involved for the first time?
When she goes to that site, she will see. It's very clear. It's easy for, if you can read, you don't have to, you know, I think even fifth or sixth or seventh grade, you will be able to understand. It's very user-friendly. If she has any questions, tell her to call back, and I'll call back and tell her, take her hand by hand. But anyway, no, she should be able to do that.
That's really good advice. Thank you. And that, again, was indivisible.org.
Right. Jeff, and I've been involved with that organization for quite a few years, and they are doing very good work and have resurrected now in the last few weeks to take a lead position on addressing Congress and the congressional members.
You know, for the next 2 years, the so-called the people that are, you know, more blue face not only a very red president, and much of what we've said tonight has been discussing the president and his executive orders, but also a very red Congress and a court that was put in place in large part, certainly the United States Supreme Court was put in place in large part by pretty conservative folks. With that in mind, a reference to an organization like indivisible.org can help give somebody a stepping point, a point where we launch, because you have to launch from somewhere. It's going to be an uphill battle for the next 2 years on the federal level.
I think that is fair, but I do want us to take a step back from only considering this conversation and the concepts in a political framework. Obviously, we're talking about an administration, but we should be clear that what is happening here is not necessarily about the president being red or blue. What we are seeing with regard to specific attacks and targets on particular communities, including the LGBTQ plus community, the trans community specifically, and other marginalized groups, is not about red or blue. And I cite for you as an example the decades of precedent, the Civil Rights Act, the Equal Employment Opportunity Act, and others that over time, over the decades, really had broad-based nonpartisan support. And so it's very important that we recognize that concepts like diversity and equity and equal opportunity, these are not red or blue concepts. These should really be considered American concepts.
I agree with you, except with the one caveat that in recent years, people who shared that view from the Republican Party have in large part been purged by loyalists. And these do not appear to be the views of the current president. Certainly, if you read only the captions, the titles of his executive orders, you would absolutely believe that he believes in it. But when you start looking at the content and what he's been doing, I don't believe that the current president holds those views as universally as we would wish he would, as many, many members of the Republican Party have in the past, many of whom have been pushed aside.
I mean, that's true. But let's be clear that what we are seeing here is not a new tactic of individuals who are opposed to a more diverse society. I mean, what we see here is a president who, at least with regard to the DEI efforts and the targeting of those efforts, who is equating what he is essentially referring to as reverse racism. He is equating efforts to remedy the history of oppression and racial hierarchy and discrimination in this country, which led to the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act and affirmative action. He is essentially attempting to equate those efforts to equalize society, to create a more equal playing field, to provide opportunities for disadvantaged groups. He's equating those efforts with the efforts that caused those situations to occur in the first place. And so this is not new. It is a tried and true tactic, but it is worth repeating that the vast majority of the American people, by virtue of the progress that this country has made on issues of civil rights and in other areas related, are not in favor of these efforts. And there is a risk and there is a danger in assuming that simply because the President of the United States is issuing these executive orders, that everybody believes what's being articulated. I don't know that that's the case. We will certainly continue to see legal challenges to those efforts. And with any luck, many of these efforts will be struck down.
Well, I think we saw today his press secretary announced again, and they like to use the term with repetition, that he's operating with a mandate. The reality is he didn't win the majority of the vote. And, you know, his success in the swing states, that's another conversation. But certainly what we're seeing is more the style of a Joseph Goebbels, or we've seen this before with the Nazis in the late 30s and mid 40s, where, you know, that campaign of projection and alleging what you're doing is actually being done by your opposition, I think is quite prevalent within this administration.
Can I interject here?
Please do.
Okay. Well, yeah, you guys are making some great points, although I really want to say that, you know, there's a lot of really polite language about all this and giving, you know, giving these people the benefit of the doubt when, in fact, they don't deserve the benefit of the doubt, because what this is, you know, this is a totalitarian takeover. This is, you know, right out of the dictator's playbook. And really, when you stop and you consider, you really have to go back to something most people are really unaware of. You know, the Civil Rights Act of 1875 that almost no one knows about unless they, you know, unless they really know. You know, when you look at that Civil Rights Act being enacted, and then you look at, you know, what this nation did, you know, to Black Americans, the entire Jim Crow, you know, movement, you know, was to shut down that Civil Rights Act, which it did. It really drew to a close, you know, Reconstruction in our nation by using propaganda that it was too expensive, that it was unnecessary, and everything was just fine. But when you look at Mein Kampf, which is what everything they're doing now is inspired by that. Mein Kampf was inspired by America's Jim Crow laws and, you know, the bigotry, you know, of not only Hitler, but all of his, you know, all of his party. And so what you're looking at is, you know, hypocrisy is the point with these people. Sadism, cruelty is the point. You're talking about, you know, the institutionalized, you know, racism, you know, it's white supremacy, and that's what this is. This is really institutionalized white supremacy in so much as, you know, everything is devised to divide and conquer everyone else. And so when you look at, again, everything that's happening, we are mirroring what the Russian Federation is doing, you know, in fact, with the LGBTQIA+ community in this country. If you look at what they do in Russia, you know, they've declared what they call the LGBT community to be an international terrorist organization. So again, international terrorist organization. And they're treating their own citizens in that community as, you know, as terrorists. And so this, when we talk about, you know, the next election and everything's going to be all this other stuff, this man can take the wheels off of everything simply by declaring the Insurrection Act, following it by martial law, suspending, you know, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, and, you know, indefinitely and being under this kind of rule until they've dismantled everything. And when you stop and you look at Hitler, it took Hitler 53 days to dismantle democracy. And, you know, that's what we're seeing is, of course, they're going to lie and they're going to say it's a mandate. And everything that they say is a projection. Every projection is an admission of what they're doing. And so I just wanted to interject with some of that and see if anybody would comment on that.
I mean, I think you are making incredible points. I teach a course on race and the law. Last week's topic of conversation was Reconstruction. We studied the Civil Rights Act of 1875. We talked about the efforts of the Freedmen's Bureau, which was designed to address the millions and millions of individuals who had been formerly enslaved. And one of the things we talked about was this concept of racial remediation, the efforts that the government undertook to provide for individuals who had been oppressed and discriminated against. And the fact that at the time, the President of the United States was not in favor of an expansive effort of the Freedmen's Bureau because the opportunities and the provisions that were being made to formerly enslaved people, he said, had previously not been provided to white Americans, which obviously is very ironic given the circumstances. Those are the same types of arguments that are being made today by the Trump administration as it relates to diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. So when I said earlier that we are not seeing things that are new, I really mean it. We've seen many of these things
Absolutely.
Throughout the course of this country, and that should inform how we respond and move forward.
And let us not forget.
It's the oppressor crying about being oppressed. I mean, it's the classic, you know, it's the classic switcheroo. I mean, it's the bigot complaining about being discriminated against. It's the bully complaining about being, you know, stood up to. That's what we're dealing with.
I believe Mein Kampf was his on his bedstand as his go-to nighttime read per his ex-wife.
Yeah, it was.
Jeff?
I'd like to turn it over to the phones for just a moment. Anna Maria is on the phone. Welcome back to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I wanted to make sure that we specify that DEI includes people of different ages, races, ethnicities, abilities,
yes,
disabilities, genders, religions, cultures, and sexual orientations. So make sure you emphasize that with everyone because it affects our elderly, it affects our veterans, too. So, FYI.
And today, it affected our CIA because under the auspice of the DEI, he's letting loose information on the new hires over the last 2 years and basically disassembling the CIA. So that's another little news point of today.
Yeah, this is very serious. It is not light. And the man who was saying, I'm not sure what he was, but the person who called, I think it was a caller, this is very serious. And so we all need to do whatever we can do. And that's why I pointed to Indivisible, because they focus on policies, not parties, policies. And that's what we need to do something about. For example, we must stop the South African immigrant Elon from accessing our private information. We must stop this man. How legally. We want to do it legally. Okay.
That's I believe there's now. An injunction that came out today that limited his access to certain orders, but I don't know how long lived that's going to be.
Okay, but let's all do what we can do. And I emailed to you the list of lawsuits that are pending just based on responses to Trump's executive orders. So, yes, there are groups that are doing their part. The ACLU is doing a great job. And Legal Defense Fund is doing their job, and others. So, but still, we all need to do whatever we can do. Okay, I don't want to take all your time. Thank Have you. A good evening.
Thank you, and you as well, and thank you for joining us. And Anna Marie, come back anytime. And with that, we are getting close to the end, but the question I wanted to end on is the question that Anna Marie just came and shared with us. Because for the next 2 years, we do face leadership in all branches of government that is far from enlightened and really taking quite a different view. And hearing places that we can go, steps we can do next, is very helpful. We're down to the last few moments, and I wanted to give our guest on the phone a chance for any last comments. Do we have about a minute total?
Okay, are you referring to me?
Sorry, yes, I was.
Okay, well, I'll try to be concise, which is difficult for me, but here it is. The bottom line is, take everything very seriously and understand that anything that you do is, you know, is going to entail sacrifice, it's going to entail risk, and, you know, You have to be willing to stand up and really sacrifice yourself for others, because, you know, if you don't, well, the time is going to come for you anyway. And people really are naive right now in thinking that this is business as usual and that all the general rules apply and guardrails and such. And it's not true. This is a different world we're living in, and people need to wake up in real time and, you know, understand that no one is safe. No one is safe. And doing everything you can do means sticking your neck out. It means getting out of your comfort zone and being prepared to lose things, to lose face, to lose friends. You know, if you really want to stand up for what being an American is supposed to be about, you know, patriotism isn't free, and it means sacrifice. And it means that, you know, you have to do what's scary, what's uncomfortable, and what's difficult. And it doesn't stop until the battle is over.
And with that, that's going to be the last word as we're out of time. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, we've looked at the dark side of the new conservative social experiment. Our guests tonight have been adjunct professor at the University of San Francisco School of Law, Jamal Anderson, and civil rights activist and congressional candidate, Rock Athena Bertain. Next week, please join us again at our usual time of 6 o'clock, as we are every Wednesday night, when, as always, we take your calls and answer your questions. Once again, thanks to all of our guests. Tonight's co-host, civil rights activist Brent Turner, and at the controls, Joanne Marr. Our thanks to all of you for joining us. I'm Jeff Hayden, and as always, zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.